The house was small, old, much the same as the one Mike had grown up in. He didn't think this one was from that time period, though. The neighborhood was old, but probably missed that particular era by a decade or two. Knowing that didn't stop it from raising memories that were much better buried. His mortal life hadn't been all that happy, but he'd gotten by all right. Life had been spent looking after other people. His mother, brother, sister. And there'd been no time to dwell on the poverty, the struggle. He simply did what he had to, until one day when all of that had been taken away. A blessing and a curse, Mike thought. Yes, he'd been taken from that life, but he'd never forgotten it. Or the people he'd left behind. Tom should be happy that there was no one for him to abandon. Mike stood at the end of the cracked asphalt driveway and stared at the tiny house. Children these days were always complaining about space. His entire family had lived in a single room, but Mike had trouble seeing Tom growing up here, in this small building with its microscopic bedrooms. He'd been a hellraiser, Mike knew, getting into trouble but always able to find his way out again. He supposed a sweet smile and an actual honest talent could do anything for a boy like him. Evelyn Conrad had several of Tom's photographs on her wall. She hadn't even taken it personally when her grandson always refused to visit. Mike scowled and made his way up the driveway, kicking at the tulips near the front step. White petals fluttered to the ground, but Mike paid them no attention. He paused in front of the door, not hesitating so much as wondering what would happen when he reached for the handle. Evelyn had issued the invitation, but she was dead now. Her grandson was inside, the owner of the dwelling, according to the dead woman's will. Had the barrier gone back up? The boy belonged to Mike, tied by blood and empty promises. But there was nothing in any of the books about a situation such as this one. He reached out and grasped the knob, throwing the door open easily. Tom hadn't even locked it. Of course not. He'd known Mike was coming. The stairs creaked a little as Mike made his way to the second floor, not bothering to hide his presence. He didn't look at the smiling photos mounted on the wall above the stairs. He'd already been over every inch of the house, the old woman acting as his guide. She'd prattled on, and though Mike had ignored her, it was clear that she was proud of her grandson's achievements, particularly in getting accepted to that school when he'd applied so late that his paperwork should never have been considered in the first place. There was more than a little meddling involved in that, Mike thought. The knowledge was useless. It wasn't as though he could come out and accuse anyone. The connection between them was so strong after a year and a half of nothing, and Mike used it, allowed it to tug him along to where the boy was. His childhood bedroom was little more than a closet. The twin bed shoved up against one wall took up much of the space, and a battered desk took up most of what was left. A small bag sat on the floor near the door, open, as though someone had recently rooted around inside. There were clothes inside, a pair of jeans and a few shirts, but no sign of a camera. A quick sweep of the room confirmed it. Tom hadn't brought his camera home with him. He also hadn't brought much in the way of clothing, so he either expected this to be a short trip, or he didn't expect to live long. Mike supposed that both options were kind of the same. Tom wasn't arrogant. He could bitch with the best of them, he had a quick tongue, and he could be fierce when angered. But he didn't have an inflated sense of self-importance. He was always acutely aware of what was at stake. He was curled up in the small bed, knees drawn to his chest and a thin pillow in his arms. Mike moved slowly toward him, not wanting to wake him yet. His hair was too long, almost shaggy in its appearance. His nose and lip were pierced as well, and he wore faded jeans with rips near the pockets, and an old, stretched-out t-shirt. He was the complete opposite of the boy Mike had groomed, the opposite of a dandy. Mike's mouth twisted at that, but he wasn't entirely surprised. The boy had run away, after all, right to the doorstep of Mike's enemy. Mike refused to believe that was coincidence. He wondered how Tom had learned of that place. It could wait, though. The vampire took off his hat and set it on the bed next to the sleeping boy, before leaning back against the desk and just looking as much as he felt like. The boy was exhausted. Mike knew that much, even if he hadn't spent 2 hours watching him sleeping. Tom usually moved a lot in his sleep, sprawling across the bed, twisting the bedclothes around his body. He hadn't moved a muscle in all the time Mike had been there, though he had mumbled sleepily to himself. Watching him again had been a novelty, something Mike hadn't realized he'd missed. But after a while, it began to grate on his nerves. He looked around and found a small stack of old baseball cards in the top drawer of the desk. An old blue rubber band was looped around, holding them together. It broke when Mike unwound it, snapping against his fingers. He dropped it on the floor and shuffled through the cards. He didn't know any of the players, had no use for such knowledge now, though he might have at one time. The cards were worn, with rounded edges and crease marks, hardly worth keeping for sentimental value, let alone monetary. Mike put one between his index and middle fingers and flicked it across the room. It landed on Tom's pillow. He slept on. Cards 2, 3, and 4 all landed next to his body, but 5 hit his forehead. 6, his nose. 7 hit his brow, and Tom's eyelashes fluttered open. He blinked for a moment, trying to bring the room into focus. Mike knew the instant Tom realized he wasn't alone. The sleepy looseness of his body was gone, and a fine tremor took hold of his hands. "Rise and shine," Mike said with a smile. "Looks like you overslept." Tom moved slowly as he pulled himself into a sitting position, leaning against the wall with his knees drawn up. He watched Mike warily, seemingly confused as to why he was just sitting there. Mike didn't blame him. He himself wasn't entirely sure. He could almost hear Beckett's voice in his head, lecturing him about consequences and unacceptable behavior. He didn't know if it referred to himself or to Tom. "Mike," Tom began, but it was clear that he had no idea what to say. Mike let him flounder for a bit before rescuing him. "It's incredibly rude not to say goodbye, Thomas," he said. Maybe it wasn't so much a rescue as a taunt, but it stopped the boy from looking like a fish, so the mission was accomplished regardless. "Well, Michael, if I'd tried to do that, there wouldn't have been a goodbye at all," Tom pointed out. "Yes, and do you know why that is?" Mike asked, flinging the rest of the baseball cards at the bed. "Because you made a decision, Tom. A serious one." "I changed my mind," Tom ground out. "I'm not the only one who ever did that." "Think again," Mike snapped. "No one in this city, with their very long memories, can ever remember this happening. Congratulations, boy. You're special." Mike let the words sink in for a moment. Tom's eyes widened a little, and the vampire smiled. Good. He recognized the reference. Not special, Mike said quickly, doing his best to keep his voice even, as he watched the human not far away, trying to decide between two different boxes of film. His hobby was cute. Mike thought he'd let Tom keep it. Mike liked to watch him work. Yes, Beckett agreed, nodding a little and watching as Tom finally made his choice and grabbed two more small green boxes from the rack. Special does garner too much outside interest, doesn't it? Never a good thing, that. No, Mike said. It isn't. They stared at each other for a moment, neither willing to look away first. Mike had to admit that this wasn't how he'd pictured their reunion.
I didn't think anything of it at first, Mike said. Just that you were running late. You were always too attached to your mortal life, as much as you hated the way everyone had turned against you, shunned you for something you had no control over. Humans are so very narrow-minded, aren't they?
Tom shrugged, a little, but kept silent.
He fiddled with one of the baseball cards, tugging on the ends. He never did know what to do with his hands when he was nervous. His gaze dropped to his lap. But then you weren't just a little bit late. You didn't show up at all. And I started to worry.
Tom looked up sharply at that.
Don't give me that look, Mike said. We are perfectly capable of worry. You'd be a fool not to think so.
An image of Brendan rose in his mind. The look on his face when his boy was so very messed up. Another. The butcher this time, forced to move more quickly than was prudent in order to keep the boy who'd caught his eye. Even John Walker, no matter how much Mike hated him, had felt that same worry. He'd hidden it well, but it was obvious now that the story had come out, how he'd sent his human away, disowned him to keep him safe. Mike would ask, safe from whom? Except he knew the answer to that. As much as he owed to William Beckett, as much as he'd kept quiet about, he'd never been blind to his actions. He'd just known better than to say anything.
The other gangs have always been very good at targeting pretty humans alone on the street. They'd have been stupid to willfully go after someone who was marked, or someone we'd even shown vague interest in. We have the butcher to thank for that. But it's not hard to whisper a few words to a hunter and get them to do the dirty work. I couldn't feel you anymore, so I figured someone would find you in a ditch in the morning. Imagine my surprise when your grandmother told me all about that school of yours, the one that accepted you incredibly quickly, well after the application deadline.
You talked to her? Tom asked suspiciously.
She was quite a conversationalist, Mike drawled. A little stupid, though, since she invited me right in that first night. Talked about you for hours. I didn't even have to make her. Tom paused again, trying to get a hold of what he wanted to say. You were here more than once.
She was more useful alive than dead, Mike said, honestly. A font of information. Like I said, she loved to talk.
I don't believe you, Tom said, shaking his head.
She had a blue teapot, fine china that she brought out when company came over, and she always had a plate of sweets on the table. All your favorites, apparently. Strawberry tarts, chocolate cake, molasses cookies. You never ate any of that with me, so how else would I know?
Mike smiled at the pallor in Tom's face. No doubt he was picturing Mike in the shabby living room, teacup and saucer in one hand as he waved off the food with the other. The image was almost funny, but it was real enough. She'd been an incredible resource, full of all the things Mike hadn't had a clue about.
He'd known Tom better in those 18 months than he had in the 4 they'd been together.
How did you learn about the school, Tom?
Mike asked.
Why there?
Tom said, rubbing at the back of his head as he tried to recover from the things Mike had just revealed.
They sent me an offer of admissions a month or so earlier. I didn't tell anyone, didn't think it was a good idea. I didn't even reply to it. But you kept it, Mike said. Of course I did, Tom said defensively. How often does someone see your work on the goddamn internet and decide to offer you a full fucking ride like that? It made me feel...
He trailed off.
Yes,
Mike pressed.
Worth something,
Tom said finally.
Something good. You haven't answered the question.
Not really, Mike said, sidestepping Tom's emotional issues for something more important.
Why there? What made you think I wouldn't find you?
I heard someone talking at the house, Tom admitted.
Bad blood, they said. The school, it was safe. Did you meet with any vampires while you were there?
Mike asked sharply.
No,
Tom replied quickly.
Too quickly. That's surprising, Mike said, because Brian Schechter rules his city with an iron fist. He's not the kind to let a marked human just wander around unchecked. He is, however, the kind who would think it was funny to let you stay. And maybe go a little farther, Mike thought. The offer of admissions troubled him. He kept it to himself. There was no use in voicing it until he had a better grasp of the game they were playing. I said I didn't see him, Tom said, raising his voice. I lived in a dorm and I rarely left the campus.
And they just happened to save you a space, Mike said.
Even when you didn't reply for over a month.
Yes, Tom said, looking almost confused.
Good. Mike wanted him off balance. Did you just show up on their doorstep, Tom?
Yes. His voice was shaky as realization sank in.
This was not normal. He'd just been too grateful to see that. Grateful to get away from him.
It made something inside Mike bristle.
Were you planning on ever coming home?
He shouldn't have asked the question. Not only could no good possibly come of it, but the distraction would give Tom time to recover, to make him less likely to slip up and tell the truth about the circumstances that saw him seek refuge so far away.
Tom blinked. No, he said, his voice strong, less confused.
He met Mike's eyes with a steady gaze and refused to look away.
Well then,
Mike said angrily, lashing out in the only way he knew how.
It's a good thing I killed your grandmother, isn't it?
Tom sat there for a moment, mouth open in shock. He hadn't expected that.
You fuck,
Tom said softly. He recovered swiftly, pulling his anger around himself to keep the hurt at bay. Mike had always admired that about Tom, though he'd never thought it would be used against him.
So you want to know what I did over there?
He demanded, eyes flashing as he got to his feet. He crossed the tiny room, angry and seemingly unafraid as he leaned in.
His name was Alex. He was so fucking good, so warm. Kept me right at his side without any trouble, I promise you. He never had to worry about me running away. I stayed with him a hell of a lot longer than I did with you. I'd still be there with him right now if you hadn't felt the need to kill an old woman. What's wrong? Didn't want to fight? Mike moved far too quickly for Tom to track the movement. In the blink of an eye, he had the boy face down on the desk, both arms pinned behind his back. It would be so easy to push his arms up a little too high, to break the bone and make him hurt. Tom struggled, and Mike did his best to hold on to his temper, and to ignore what exactly had finally caused him to lose it.
Alex! Let me go! Get off me!
Tom continued to struggle, but he couldn't get out of Mike's grasp. The vampire allowed him to continue, to work the adrenaline out of his system, but eventually came to a point where, if he kept it up, he'd end up breaking his own arm.
You just don't know when to quit, Tom,
Mike hissed, leaning over to speak directly into the boy's ear.
This could have been a hell of a lot more pleasant, but you just had to keep talking, didn't you?
It's the truth, Tom snarled. You were always so fond of that, except when it comes to the people I'm fucking, apparently. He kicked out, catching Mike's shin. He wasn't wearing shoes, but the blow landed hard enough that it would have hurt another human. Mike twisted Tom's arm up higher. Tom's words caught in his throat, and he groaned at the strain. It didn't break, but his back arched, and he went up on his toes in an effort to relieve some of the pressure. It was nice to know that Mike could inflict as much hurt as Tom himself could. He didn't think too much about that. It was never pleasant to realize you'd accidentally given someone that much power over you. What would Beckett say? I'm going to let you up. You're going to get your shoes, and you're going to walk downstairs and out the front door. There's a car waiting, and you aren't going to give me any trouble. You're going to get in and be a good boy, aren't you? Mike asked.
Fuck you!
Tom spat. He wished, not for the first time, that his mesmerism still worked on the kid. It was his own fault, he knew. He should never have been so greedy, shouldn't have marked him so often. He wondered, briefly, if Tom's own gift had gotten stronger over the last year and a half, if he'd even realized it was there. Want to know your other option, Tom? Mike asked, his voice almost conversational, though he was seething inside. I could kill you right here. And after that, I can pack my bags and go find Alex. Tom stopped struggling at that. Schechter's feud was with Beckett, and he's gone now. The border is open again. It was an exaggeration, but Tom didn't know that. It won't be that difficult to find your dear Alex, I assure you, Mike continued. Once I track him down, I'm not going to make it quick for him, I'm afraid. I'll bleed him dry and make sure he knows it's because you just had to keep pushing. Let me up, Tom said, going limp in Mike's grasp. Good choice, Mike said, stepping back. I'm sure Alex would be grateful.
Don't,
Tom snapped, issuing a clear warning despite the position he found himself in. Don't even say his name to me. Then be good, Mike said simply. He watched as Tom slipped on a pair of hideous sandals, and then, with a hand planted firmly on the small of Tom's back, Mike led him out of the bedroom and down the stairs to the front door. Tom took even, measured steps, his back perfectly straight in a show of good posture that would have made his grandmother weep with joy. He gripped the railing on the stairs with his left hand, fingers curling painfully tight around the rough surface with its far too many layers of paint. There were cracks along the underside, places where the paint had chipped away,
and the soft pads of Tom's fingertips caught on their sharp edges. He barely felt it as it sliced through deep enough to bleed, to leave a sticky trail along the white railing. Part of him wanted to look back, see the contrast, and preserve it. Broken heart, he'd call it. Proof of life. Not for long, it would seem. Not with where they were going. Tom didn't allow himself to look back as he stepped through the front door. There was no point in remembering the countless times he'd run in or out of that house, shouting hello or goodbye or I love you. That part of his life was over now, but he'd be okay, he told himself. If he'd learned anything while he was away, it was that nothing, no one, could take his memories from him. Tom was unsurprised to find a dark sedan parked at the curb. It was all sleek lines and polished paint, the kind of thing that seemed to attract all vampires, regardless of rank or gang. In another lifetime, Tom would have wondered at it all, laughed and teased Mike about being part magpie. As it was, he just opened the passenger door and sat stiffly in his seat. He didn't bother with the belts. Mike had waited 18 months. He wasn't likely to risk Tom's life to reckless driving at this point. Mike slammed the door, and Tom jumped a little. His face went red at that. So much for stoic silence and dignity. There have been changes since you left, Mike said after several minutes of silence. The car slowed at a stop sign before continuing through the intersection. Tom began to rethink the seatbelts. There was a pause as the vampire waited for Tom to acknowledge what he'd said. Tom stayed silent, partially out of rebellion, but mostly because everything changed, and the dandies were no exception. You'll see when you get there, Mike continued, when he realized that Tom wasn't likely to answer. The rest of the drive was spent in awkward silence. Tom stared straight ahead, hands folded in his lap, trying to ignore the growing sense of dread in the pit of his stomach. How often had he made this trip in the past? More times than he could count, but he'd never been this scared. Not even that first night as he'd stared with wide eyes at the vampire beside him, trying to reorder his worldview to fit this new piece of information. The dandy house was still gorgeous, still the epitome of everything he'd ever wanted as a child. Sprawling, well-tended, rich. It took his breath away even now. Mike rolled down his window and punched in the security code for the gate before driving through. That was new. They usually left the cars on the road for someone else to dispose of. Bringing the car to the house made a certain kind of sense, though. Mike wasn't about to take the chance that Tom would run. Tom would have been offended at that. He'd given his word, after all. But that didn't mean much, apparently. He'd broken it once before, but things were different now. He'd practically sworn on Alex's life, and he wasn't about to do anything to endanger him. It took Tom 3 tries to get his door open, but he managed it before Mike got to the passenger side. Tom sat there for a moment, taking deep breaths of fresh air, so good after the stuffy new car scent of the sedan. Movement in Tom's peripheral vision saw him bolt to his feet, sidestepping clumsily to keep himself out of arm's reach of the vampire. They stared at each other then. 2 feet of space and 18 months of freedom separating them. Let's go, Tom, Mike said, finally. Tom didn't say anything to that, just forced himself to put 1 foot in front of the other, to focus on the steps as he made his way up, on the ornate door as he closed the distance to it. He paused on the doorstep, shuffling his weight from foot to foot. He knew he was stalling. He also knew that it was stupid. Reaching out, Tom closed his fingers around the handle and threw the door open, unmindful of the excessive force he used. The door hit the wall, the sound of crumbling plaster loud in the suddenly silent entry hall. As he crossed the threshold, the boy made a decision. Thomas Conrad was gone, left outside on the porch along with the old life he'd led, the one where his days revolved around the camera in his hands and the incredible things he'd see through the lens. He was dead and gone, just like the old woman. Just like the young man back home would be if this didn't work. Alex. Tom allowed himself to say the name once more, to see his face and his wicked smile, before pushing it all away. He'd lived a double life before, hiding one aspect of himself from anyone with curious eyes and worried thoughts. He could do it again, even if the only person he was hiding from was himself. Tom straightened his shoulders and looked around the room with a critical gaze, taking in as much as he could in the short time he knew he was allotted. The foyer had been redone since he was last there, the walls now a rich yellow that set off the polished mahogany floors. Painted columns framed the entryway to the small parlor on the left. Tom could see the room clearly from where he stood by the door. Nothing in there had changed. It sent a shiver down his spine. It took him a few minutes to realize that he was being presented for approval. Mike was careful about it, but once Tom caught on, he wondered how he'd managed to miss it when they first came in. This man was important. His decision was everything. Tom got the feeling that he was the only constant in this strange place, that this strange world revolved around him and his whims. Only it didn't, because he was gone now. Tom hadn't really believed it when Mike told him, but there was no denying that William Beckett was nowhere to be found. There were other vampires in the house, each making their way toward the foyer to see about the commotion. There were a few faces that Tom didn't know, fledglings most likely, and a few he did recognize. There was the butcher, one hand pressed possessively against the back of one of the unfamiliar vampires, a shaky, pale boy who looked no older than Tom himself. He was injured, leaning heavily on his sire, watching Tom with tired but sharp eyes. Quinn was standing at the end of the hall, clearly surprised at what he saw. Lacey was with him, dressed as impeccably as ever. A human girl, a servant Tom vaguely remembered, was peeking out over Lacey's shoulder, her hand on his arm. That was inappropriate, Tom thought. You didn't fuck with the house humans. It wasn't safe. Tom was frowning at her, trying to telegraph his thoughts her way. You're expendable, he isn't. When movement to his right caught his attention. He looked over and froze like a deer in headlights, shocked at the familiar face, the amusement in the vampire's blue, blue eyes. Something surged in his chest, scaring him, shaming him when he realized just what it was. Hope had no place here. Ryer was going to make sure Tom stayed quiet. He wasn't going to save him. Not that Tom needed saving. He'd agreed to this, after all. Our guest. Tom turned toward the voice and saw John Walker on the stairs. He had one hand on the railing, and he regarded Tom with a curious glance. The expression shifted to something harder as he looked just a little further back, no doubt at Mike. The new leader of the Dandy Gang struck a carefully casual pose on the staircase, one hand resting gently on the neck of a human standing two steps below him, fingers curved across the boy's throat. So much noise! Were you all raised by wolves? It was Brendan. Tom tore his eyes away from the curious boy and watched as the vampire came down the stairs, stopping where John stood partway down. He was pulling a waif-thin boy behind him, one who was rolling his eyes in fond exasperation. Brendan fit the boy against him and looked down at Tom, eyebrows raised in surprise. Christ, they were just kids, barely out of high school. Did they have any idea what they were doing? What they were giving up? They should be home with their families, playing board games, or on the phone with their friends, bitching about girls or boys or both. They were going to die, and they were going to kill, and they didn't even know. There was no way that they understood what was happening. Not when they were both standing there, entirely too close to the vampires who would take everything away from them. Thomas, John said, welcome home. His boy looked sharply at him when he spoke, but John ran a hand down his arm, quieting whatever questions he wanted to ask. The other boy had an awareness to his gaze as he looked critically at Tom. The older boy toyed with the idea that he was taking in Tom's stance, the distance between him and Mike, the tension in the room. This kid was smarter than Tom had given him credit for. Bolder, for sure. He pulled away from Brendan and moved down the stairs, stopping beside his friend. Brendan frowned, but didn't stop him. The kid wasn't on a leash then, was allowed to do things that most dandies would consider rude. That didn't make it better. Things could change in the blink of an eye. Tom himself was proof of that. You know where to go, Mike said. His voice was flat, giving nothing away. Tom was tempted to turn to him, to search his face for any hint of what he was actually feeling, but he resisted the urge. He squared his shoulders and took a step toward the stairs. Briar moved behind him, crossing to the other side of the room. Tom looked over at him, but the vampire paid him no attention, more focused on the others around him. He was gauging their reactions, Tom realized. Briar frowned at both Lacey and Quinn, and Tom desperately wanted to look over to see what had caused it. He didn't, though, just turned back to the staircase, to the two vampires and the kids who stood with them. Such a waste. Or was it? Tom took a step toward the stairs and made them a promise. He didn't know how long he had, but he'd make it his mission to make them see. He wasn't stupid enough to think he could send them to Schechter. Briar's presence there underscored that, reminded Tom uncomfortably of their conversation on the train. But there had to be somewhere they could go. He'd just have to scare them, lay it out in excruciating detail. Tom made his way slowly, steadily up the stairs, pausing only long enough to fix the blue-eyed one with a glare so dark that the kid took an involuntary step backward. Brendan's boy was there immediately, stepping in front of his friend and blocking him from view. Tom admired that protective streak. He just wished the kid would use it for himself instead. John, Tom said, nodding at the vampire as he passed him. It was impertinent to address the leader of the gang so familiarly, but Tom hardly had a frame of reference to draw from. Brendan. Well, that was unexpected, Brendan said loudly. Only if you haven't been paying attention, Briar remarked. As much as Tom wanted to stay, to listen in, he kept walking. He didn't stop until he reached the second floor, third door on the left. John didn't have to look at Ryan to know he was staring at Briar with wary eyes. The protective air he'd put on for Tom's benefit stripped away the moment he recognized the other vampire's voice. Briar leaned casually against the wall, looking up the stairs with a smile on his face, his eyes clearly amused at the human's expense. Ryan's heart was beating quickly, though the deep breaths he kept pulling in were clearly meant to calm his nerves. It wasn't working, and with every passing moment, Briar's smile grew wider, more delighted. The boy was afraid, most likely projecting those fears for the Deimos to pick up. John didn't blame him. Robert Briar's last visit hadn't exactly gone smoothly where Ryan was concerned. From where he stood, John could feel Brendan's anger, every muscle so tense that his body was practically shaking with it. John reacted without thinking, splaying a hand between Brendan's shoulder blades and pushing him forward, down to the same step as the two boys. "Take them home, Brendan," he said. Brendan took a step toward the railing, his hands unclenching only long enough to wrap around the polished wood, to make it creak with the force of his anger. It was a stupid fledgling move, to disregard an order, and annoyance flared quick and hot in John's chest. He forced himself to keep it in check, even after Brendan began to speak. "Shouldn't you be off somewhere, endangering someone else's boy?" he asked, with a pointed look at the butcher before turning back to the envoy. "That isn't so polite," Briar remarked. "John Walker, do you let all your people get away with such disrespect?" "Even you have to admit that he does have a point," John replied casually. He moved closer to Brendan then, reaching out and clasping tightly to his shoulder, digging his fingers into the soft muscle near his neck. "But we're all grown-ups here, aren't we? That means we're moving on, and Brendan is going to bring the boys home. Ryan's tired, aren't you?" He turned toward the boy, whose eyes were still trained on Briar. It took a moment for him to look over at John, but he nodded with a quick, jerky movement. "It's late," he said softly. "So put him to bed, Brendan," John said. His meaning was clear. Some of the others laughed quietly. Ryan blushed and looked uncomfortable. But John didn't give it a second thought. It was the fastest, easiest way to dismiss Brendan, without seeming to give in to Briar. It wouldn't do to give him a completely free pass. Brendan would have to learn to control his outbursts in the future. John doubted that he'd be able to juggle everyone's issues, and eventually something would have to give. "Come on," Brendan said quietly, wrapping his fingers around one of Ryan's slim wrists. He tugged him forward, and the boy reached back for Spencer, lacing their fingers together and pulling him along too. John watched them go, holding an unnecessary breath until the door closed behind them. All was silent for a moment before Briar laughed quietly to himself.
"So much drama,"
he said, shaking his head slightly. "Yes," John replied tersely. "Schechter always did have a sense of humor. It's nice to see that he hasn't lost it over the years. There's no way this reunion could have possibly gone differently, but at least it was educational."
"How so?" Briar asked. "Thomas recognized you," John said.
His smile was sharp as he looked from Briar to Carden, who still stood near the door. It was perhaps unwise to share the thought so soon, but there would be more difficult conversations before the night was out, and John would take whatever advantage he could get. Briar looked incredibly unimpressed, but John ignored him for the moment. It was obvious from the start that he'd been sent either to spy or to protect something, some truth or valuable piece of information. But maybe things were even more complicated than that. John sighed. He had enough to deal with on his own. The last thing he needed was more of Schechter's meddling.
"I have something to say to that," Carden said, taking a half step forward. His eyes were dark, angry.
He was spoiling for a fight, and John made his way swiftly down the stairs, intent on putting a stop to it, or at least tempering Cardin's reactions. This mess required a delicate hand. No one had ever mistaken Cardin for having one.
"Not to me, you don't," Briar said.
He pushed away from the wall and made his way toward the door, not in the least bit intimidated by the mesmerist. John supposed he had no reason to be. Cardin was considerably younger, and Briar was a visiting envoy. No matter the insult, he'd get safe passage from the city. They could never afford to truly anger either Schechter or Gabriel, and that afforded Briar even more leeway than a visitor usually received. Cardin opened his mouth to protest, but John cut in smoothly.
"It can wait," he said. "What I have to say, however, cannot."
Cardin fixed John with a dark look, but the elder vampire merely inclined his head toward the parlor.
"The rest of you should all find something to do," he said pointedly.
No one was brave enough to try John's patience. The foyer cleared out immediately, leaving Cardin and John staring at one another.
"Why are you covering for him?" Cardin demanded. "You know as well as I do that he's up to something."
"Of course he is," John said, exasperated. "This is a test, Mike. Not only of how permissive I'm prepared to be with all of you, but also in how far we're willing to go to protect our interests."
"Exactly!"
Cardin exclaimed, raising his voice far too loudly for John's liking.
"Do you think for one minute that Schechter isn't doing the exact same thing?"
John asked.
"Briar might belong to Gabriel, but Tom recognized him. Which means there are questions that we need to be asking. Briar can keep out of sight if he wants to, so how much time did Tom spend at or near the Dandy safe house? Furthermore, anyone could have sent anyone to keep an eye on us. So why Briar? What message is he sending with this? What is his interest in Tom?"
The other vampire was quiet for a moment, absorbing it all. John wanted to breathe a sigh of relief when he realized that he'd gotten through to him.
"Okay," he said after a while. "You have a point."
"I have many points," John said, "and I'm about to make another one."
"Of course," Cardin said flatly.
"What do you plan to do with Tom?" John asked. He slipped his hands into his jacket pockets and watched as a wary look came over Mike's features. He didn't want to have this conversation, but there was more to it than that. John realized with a start that Cardin himself had no idea what he was going to do. He might not have been known for his delicacy or finesse, but he wasn't a stupid man. He certainly knew how to pull a plan together, how to make contingencies and examine things from every possible angle. So why was he suddenly at a loss?
"He's home," Cardin said simply.
That didn't actually answer the question, and John just shook his head.
"Yes, I saw that. I was standing on the stairs when he tried to intimidate Spencer. Which, I'll add, will not be happening again."
Cardin snorted a little, an indelicate, undandy-like sound. John tried a different track.
"Your loyalty to Beckett, does it extend to repeating his mistakes?"
"Excuse me?" Cardin demanded.
"Mike,"
John said, patience strained.
"What do you think is going to happen if you turn that boy? He doesn't want it. He's going to fight it. We lucked out with Siska and the Butcher. Whether it was instinct or something else that smoothed the transition, I don't know. But he could have become another Peter Wentz. Do we have to worry about Tom now, too?" Cardin wasn't entirely sure of what to say to that.
Pete Wentz was fucked up long before Beckett got to him, he said after a moment. Tom is not Pete. For a moment, John thought about stopping him, just reaching out and grabbing his sleeve to pull him back. He'd be well within his rights to do it. Their conversation was hardly over. Carden's answers had hardly been suitable. But in the end, he let the mesmerist go. John knew how to choose his moment. Brendan slid into the driver's seat of Carden's car, which was still idling in front of the front steps of the safe house. He thought darkly of Beckett and his rule about cars on Dandy property. They were ugly, he had said. They ruined the aesthetic of the house. He'd never have allowed Carden to get away with bringing one right up to the door, no matter what the circumstances. Brendan almost wished Beckett were still around. True, the punishment wouldn't have anything to do with whatever game the other mesmerist was currently playing, but it would make Brendan feel marginally better. He'd known from the beginning that Briar would be trouble, but he'd hoped to keep him away from Ryan, or at least keep any run-ins semi-private. It wasn't right to scare him in front of half the gang, to make him seem weak when he was really anything but. Maybe that's what annoyed Brendan most of all. There had been whispers over the last year or so, stories circulating about just how Tom had managed to disappear. Brendan hadn't given them much thought at first. As much of a filthy gossip as he was, he knew very well that half the stories he told didn't have a shred of truth. But maybe he should have paid attention. Tom had been with Schechter, and it was more than just making fun of Carden. It had to be if Briar was here, sniffing around. Why Tom? Was there some specific reason, or had he just been chosen randomly? If not Tom, would he have taken Ryan, if Gerard and Briar had mentioned him? Some of the others didn't understand Brendan's obsession. They looked at the skinny kid and saw poverty and frailty, imperfection. Brendan saw heart and loyalty, a quiet strength that let him get through the day. Those qualities would only grow stronger after he was turned, Brendan knew. Anyone with half a brain should be able to see it. Schechter had more than half a brain. Brendan threw the car into gear and pulled away from the steps with a squeal of tires. Thinking would get him nowhere. Brendan? Ryan asked, clicking his seatbelt into place and wrapping long, thin fingers around the nylon. Brendan didn't reply, just raised a hand to ward off any comments or questions. His anger was simmering too close to the surface, his troubled thoughts demanding more attention than he wanted to give them. It would be far too easy to snap at the boy in his frustration. Brendan drove in silence, pushing the sedan well over the speed limit and taking corners far too quickly. Stop signs were nothing more than a suggestion, though he did slow for red lights. He could hear Spencer shuffling a little in the back seat, breathing quickly as he watched the landscape fly past his window. But Ryan sat quietly in the passenger seat, relaxed, despite the dangerous driving. He had seen Brendan's moods before, had grown more accustomed to them over the time they'd been together. So very different than those first few terrifying days, Brendan thought. He reached out and settled one hand on Ryan's knee, squeezing, digging his fingers into tight, well-washed denim. Can I ask a question now, caveman? Ryan asked. Spencer snorted in the back seat. Not yet, Brendan said. He took a corner sharper than he intended, the back of the car fishtailing a little. The boys were thrown against the doors, but neither of them complained beyond rubbing at sore heads and elbows, or, in Ryan's case, offering a pointed look and a raised eyebrow. Brendan drove straight to the Smith home, throwing the car into park on the street, blocking the driveway completely. He didn't know if Spencer's parents were home or not, but he didn't really care if they needed access to their drive. "Last stop, boys," Brendan said, throwing open his door. Ryan gave him a look, but unbuckled his seatbelt regardless. Spencer scrambled out of the car and made such a fuss, Brendan was surprised he didn't kiss the ground. "Does he always drive like that?" he whispered to Ryan. "No, sometimes he's reckless," Ryan replied, leading the way to the house. No one was home when they got inside, for which Brendan was happy. It would be simple to ensure their privacy, but with his black mood, he was likely to give too strong a suggestion. He suspected that Spencer enjoyed having parents whose minds weren't completely broken. Brendan placed a hand low on Ryan's back and led him toward the stairs. "What are you doing?" Ryan asked, tripping on the first step. Brendan studied him with a hand on his arm. "Putting you to bed," Brendan replied. "Brendan," Ryan protested, twisting painfully around to share a look with Spencer. "Oh, please," Brendan said. "It's not like I expect you to stay there once I'm gone, but just humor me." Ryan stopped fighting him, allowing himself to be moved along for the time being. Ryan was a smart boy. He knew when to pick his battles. Brendan liked to think he'd taught him that good things could come from humoring Brendan on occasion. Spencer turned in the opposite direction once they reached the top of the stairs, fixing Ryan with a stern look and a muttered threat about having sex in his guest room. "I will fuck in your actual bed, Ross. Twice, and I will not change the sheets." Brendan could have easily pointed out that A, it wasn't his guest room, and B, there was nothing he could do to actually stop them. But he wasn't all that interested in needling Spencer. Brendan didn't actually feel like having sex either. There was something to be said for methodically stripping Ryan down and pulling back the covers of a bed that might as well just be Ryan's, given how often he slept in it. It gave Brendan something else to focus on for a few moments, and all thoughts of Schechter and Briar, of taboos and complicated problems, disappeared as his hands met warm, supple skin. He curled up beside the boy on the narrow bed. "So, can I ask questions now?" Ryan asked, stretching a little under the quilts. He tucked one hand beneath his head and traced the fine stitches on the blanket with the other. He had a look of determination on his face. Brendan could refuse to answer. He could even say that dandy business should stay among dandies. But he knew that Ryan wasn't likely to give up so easily. He never did when he wanted something. "That depends on the questions," Brendan said carefully. There were some things Ryan didn't have to worry about. That was Brendan's job. "Who was that guy? The one who came in with Cardin?" "Tom," Brendan said. A flash of annoyance came over Ryan's face. Of course, he'd heard John say his name. "Tom belongs to Cardin, like you belong to me." Ryan's mouth twisted. "And like Spencer belongs to John," Brendan pressed. Ryan still didn't like that, but there was no sense in denying it. Not when it was apparently so easy to spirit away the humans who did. "Welcome home," Ryan said. "Tom was gone for quite some time," Brendan said carefully. He paused, wondering how much was safe to tell. He didn't think Ryan would get any ideas. They were far past the stage where Ryan was skittish and angry. He didn't think the boy was that good an actor. Not when Brendan could hear the beating of his heart, could smell how much he enjoyed being laid out with Brendan beside him. He ran away. Ryan's shock was palpable.
Wow,
he said. There's a city up north, Brendan continued. It was close to us. Schechter, it was Beckett's punishment, really. But anyone close to Beckett was fair game. Tom's been there for the last year and a half.
Why did he come back? Ryan asked.
Brendan shook his head. That was the question. Someone might know, but they hadn't shared the information with him. He's angry, Ryan said softly. He's not here because he wants to be. Brendan thought back to the dark glare on the staircase. No, Tom wasn't there by choice. That meant he was capable of anything, really. He had nothing to lose. I don't want you around the house if you don't have to be there, Brendan said, running a finger down Ryan's bare shoulder. He got lost on the contrast between their skin, found himself jolted out of it when Ryan shivered. Briar's there, but also Tom. It isn't safe. I want you to stay away from him.
Okay,
Ryan said easily. I'm serious, Brendan insisted. You're not to be alone with him.
I said okay, Ryan repeated.
He reached out and traced Brendan's jaw, fingers moving up over his ear and into his hair. Brendan let himself be pulled down, let Ryan lick into his mouth, and only vaguely registered the fact that it seemed entirely too much like a diversionary tactic.